If you enjoy this podcast, and don't forget to subscribe to catch all future episodes. Also, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/switchboxtv for video versions of this show, plus loads more videos covering sport, music, and lifestyle. That's youtube.com/switchboxtv. This episode was recorded in August 2020.
I'm lying low, keeping quiet, 'cause I've got no idea why I wanna know you. You won't need me back again. It's funny how things change. We're all so very strange, but would you take back all your feelings for me? Does it matter anyway when you tell me all your secrets, never show me all the love you threw away and I tried? Feeling anxious, making progress. If I could disappear, I'd hope you'd notice and help me out again. It's funny how things change. You leave me just the same as everybody. Would you take back all your feelings for me? Does it matter anyway when you tell me all your secrets, never show me all the love you threw away and I tried?
Welcome to the Need to Know Music Show with me, Rona McManus. And today I'm joined by a singer-songwriter who channels the greats of the past while forging his own path with the raw honesty to his songs. Please welcome Lewis Coop. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. So how's lockdown been treating? What have you been doing during this lockdown the last few months?
I suppose like everyone, can't play live. I was going to play going to play a headline show and going to do a few different festivals and stuff, but as with the rest of us, can't do that. So I've like really just thrown myself into recording stuff. I'm in a tiny, this is a bedroom with my mum and dad's, I moved back to my mum and dad's place for a bit. And I'm in a tiny bedroom. So I've just been recording pretty much all day, every day. Writing new songs and recording just to try and, you know, get better at doing that on my own at home.
Have you been doing sort of some live stream stuff? Have you got into that?
Yeah, I've been trying to do some. I always used to hate doing live streams, and then kind of like this is the only way to play live. So, yeah, I've done live streams. I've tried to do one every Sunday, every other Sunday, just to chill. I do some requests. I love playing some old 70s piano stuff. So it's nice just to jam some of those and chat to people a little bit. And so, yeah, I've done some of that. I mean, what else? I go running a lot, but that's non-musical. But just
that's
trying
okay.
to stay.
It's good. It's important.
yeah, it's like, it's all you can do. My day is go for a run, come back, record, maybe do a live stream, scroll through Instagram a bit, go and do a bit more recording.
It's good.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I've just been recording so much.
So is this going to be, do you have like a studio in the house that's good enough quality to release? Is this stuff you're releasing, or is it demoing stuff?
So, so it's not the most state of the art thing, but you know, but I've always been one for like trying to get the most out of a small amount of stuff rather than having loads of stuff. So it's kind of like one or two microphones, a keyboard and whatever, and then see it. Like how much you can do with that acoustic guitar, you know, and just kind of doing that. So yeah, it's kind of like a real basic setup, but yeah, it's like trying to get it to the point where you can kind of do it yourself, and obviously kind of brings it home to you, like the realities of like the cost of recording in a real studio and then what you're capable of doing on your own as well.
I suppose that necessity is the mother of invention. So we're all kind
that's it. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I was literally chatting to my dad about it yesterday, because we'll have long chats about careers and stuff like that. And we were just saying like, you know, as difficult as this is for everyone, it's kind of, you have to try and adapt and try and find a positive out of it and try and make the most of it in some way. And it's forced me, with nothing else to do. I mean, I've always recorded, but it's forced me to like, this is all I can do. This is all I can do for now. So let's just try and get as good as possible with it, you know.
Absolutely. I think every musician's been kind of innovating and kind of just sort of trying to keep creating, you know, because as much as lockdown is frustrating as far as going out and interacting with the outside world, I suppose it is a good time to kind of be a bit more introspective.
Yeah, that's definitely it. Yeah, it's like, I mean, there are things I miss. Like, I mean, I had plans to like try and road trip my mates in America. I've got quite a lot of friends over there, and I had all these plans to go traveling this year. It was the year of like doing all the things that I had on my bucket list. Really, that was what I wanted to go do this summer. Was like, you know, I've spent a lot of summers doing all the wedding gigs and tons of different shows, and then whatever else, or touring with people. And this summer, I was like, I'm gonna go traveling this year, and it's like been the complete opposite. But it's like, you can't just dwell in that, like, you know, what am I doing? It's like, I'm gonna try and, you just gotta make the most of it in some other way, haven't you? So.
Last night I lost myself, running out onto a lake. I feel okay. Sometimes my mother says, look, you'll be fine. Looking out into a box, I drift away. Sometimes when I am so happy to retain my pride. I'm okay. No, I'm not sure. Cause maybe I'm better now. No, I'm not scared. No, I'm just shaken. Cause maybe I care now.
So let's take it back to the start. How did you get into music? What sort of age were you when you just sort of, when you kind of discovered music?
Well, I think, I mean, my parents will always argue that I was always a dramatic kid. But I mean, like, I did a little bit of singing in primary school, but nothing that was like, nothing that you'd say I was going to be a musician. But it was when my mum, I'll try and keep the story really short, but my mum bought like a keyboard, like a light up keyboard for Christmas for the family. And it had two Torah's Out of Place songs in it. It had the song Your Song on it. And I think I just kind of liked the song and I played a little bit. I never played the piano. It was just like, you'd just be like this, yeah. But I think I liked the song and they gathered that I liked the song. And then, but for some reason that meant that I was a huge Elton fan in their eyes for some reason. And I don't quite know why. I don't know if I did, you know, was a big fan. But anyway, they ended up telling me they were going to take me to a fireworks display indoors at the Birmingham NIA. Like, it's going to be a bonfire inside. They said they sold it, telling me that Take That we're going to play. And as an 11-year-old, I was like, oh, great, I can't wait. So I went, and then there was all these hints, and I never twigged. I've got it down here. They even bought me a program. They bought me an Elton John, like, book, everything. And then, but I never twigged until he walked on stage and did like a full 2-hour gig. And it just like, there was literally that moment. It was like, I just know that's what I want to do. And I think literally.
So it was a surprise Elton John gig.
That was it, yeah.
With no fireworks though. It must be disappointing for an 11-year-old.
No, but there was, the stage show was amazing. It was a red piano show. Yeah. It had a bright red piano and all these like neon props and videos. And I think the whole thing, I think it wasn't just the piano and the music. It was like the whole show and the like the Vegas feel and these beautiful David Chappelle films. The whole thing was just like, I don't know. It was the whole experience really inspired me, the art of it, the video, the visuals, the music. And then, yeah, literally the next day I like YouTube how to play Your Song. So in a really crude way, learn how to play it on the piano. And then that was it, really. I just learned on the piano, just different, like loads of Elton songs. Then I started progressing more into the Beatles and learning Let It Be, Imagine, you know, like the simple piano stuff. And then it kind of, that was it. I learned a bit of Billy Joel. And then did the same with guitar, really. Just got obsessed with learning instruments on YouTube, so.
And at what point did you start to think you wanted to sort of write your own songs and express your own sort of feelings and things like that? When did that sort of kick in? Because obviously at this point you're obviously mimicking a lot of your favorite artists, you're learning songs and you're doing all that important stuff. At some point you think, all right, okay, I've got my own thing to say here. What sort of age were you when that happened?
I think it was just like a natural thing to do, just because of the people. With my approach to music, it was always, I never thought about, I want to achieve that, so I've got to work at that or something. It was always just like, I wanted to play Elton John music, so I didn't think, I need to learn how to play the piano. It was just like, I just want to play the song, which is why I YouTubed it, and I do it on the day. So the thing with songwriting, because everyone that I was listening to, Elton, the Beatles, ELO, the Stones, or whatever, a lot of it is you know, powered by original music, and it was just like a natural thing. That's what you do. I just thought, that's what you do. You've got to write your own songs. So it was just like a thing. I mean, they weren't great songs. My dad got and encouraged me. He'd like write me some lyrics or something, and I'd like try and write a song or whatever. And it was just like, you can have a go. Like, don't be scared to have a go. You can write your own songs.
But it was, so was just, your dad musical? Like, was your dad musical?
No, not at all. Not at all, ever. It was just like, just been really good at encouraging me, you know. And it was just like, all right, well, if you're scared to write some lyrics, I'll write some lyrics. We wrote like a crude James Bond theme or something.
Brilliant.
I think it was called Bullet With Your Name On It or something like that. And it was like,
There should be a James Bond film called that. There should be, that's brilliant.
Bullet With Your Name On, something like that. It was super crude, but it was like,
I could see you in a Shirley Bassey outfit, actually. I think that would be good.
That's my dream, really. I mean, if I ever got to the point in a career where I get to do a Bond theme, I might resurrect it.
That'd be brilliant.
I wrote one when I was 12.
We heard it here first.
But yeah, but it was because I was obsessed with Live and Let Die, that like huge writing, that production, stuff like that. But so it was all just like natural, just to have a go at doing things like that. It wasn't like a thought out or like, I reckon I'll have a go. It's just like, that's what you're doing it, I guess.
I suppose all the sort of artists that you mentioned, they have a kind of a flamboyance to them, don't they? It's all much more than just the music. It's as you said, a performance art around it. I mean, is that something that you carried into your own music?
I'm not like a particularly flamboyant. I mean, look, I mean, I'm playing polo and some G. I'm not particularly flamboyant, I don't think. I don't know. I do like it. I love the glam rock stuff. Like at the moment, I'm on like a bit of an Iggy Pop, David Bowie, Velvet Underground kind of phase, all that sort of stuff. So the kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, the glam rock and the punk of like the early 70s and stuff. I love all of that stuff. And I feel like I've thought about it more and more recently. It's something that you have to do as an artist. Like looking back on those artists, it was always like, you have to do something more than just like play a song in a way, but they still had amazing songs. They could just like do both of these things so well, you know. But yeah, I've thought about it a lot more, and like, why not? Like, there's more to. So I suppose for me, I've always done it. It's been slightly different because I'm slightly more like introverted, kind of with my songs and that sort of thing.
Well, I think that kind of suits today more than the kind of outrageous outfits type thing. I think there's a lot more of a market for that now, I think.
Yeah, there's some people like Lady Gaga that are still doing the kind of, essentially doing a pop version of glam rock. It's like glam pop, isn't it, in a way? And I suppose that's still a thing. And I do like that.
When you hear her singing on things like the Star Is Born soundtrack, it's just like she's just singing straight, and it's just absolutely amazing. And you think, when it's stripped right back, she's just an amazing talent.
And that's why she's a good reference point, because it's the same as those artists in the 70s that with stripped back without all of that facade, they was just amazing. Like my favorite, like Elton record is like Honky Chateau. Or Tumbleweed Connection, it's just a piano, bass and drums with a little bit of guitar. And the lyrics Bernie Taupin are so good, and these vocals are great, the piano is great, the musicianship's great. There's nothing glam about the music. So the music itself was strong enough as it is. And then it's just the stuff on top of it which makes those artists so special for their time as well. So, and then Lady Gaga is a good reference because she's a talented person that writes great pop music, has an amazing voice, can play the piano, do all that, and then she does the glam show on top of that, which makes her like a real special artist. So she's a good reference point, I guess. Not that my music sounds anything like Lady Gaga, but
no, but that's it all goes into the melting pot, doesn't it? That comes out the web, you know, you feed the stuff in one end and it comes out the other way as your own thing. And it's great to have all of those, have all those influences in as wide a range as possible. It's fantastic. So just seeing what the stuff you've been doing then, you mentioned the Royal Albert Hall the other day on the phone to me. You're saying what was that? How did you get to play that? So you played the Royal Albert Hall, when was that?
We played it in November, and I played with my band, just my mates, it's, you know, best people to have in your band. I kind of known this group called Music for Youth for a long time that put on amazing events, and I got to know them when I was kind of like 16, when I was in a couple of events for them, through my school choir or something like that. I retained kind of a relationship with them over the years. I did stuff with like my first band when I was like 16 or something with them. So I kind of knew them, and then kind of retained a relationship, but kind of lost touch a little bit. But then a mutual connection put us in touch again for me to go and help them out with just to kind of like talk about music and play some songs for the kids that are involved this time. And then they put on this huge event called the Proms for a lot of young musicians. And so they asked us to be a part of it, which was amazing. One of the best.
What was it like? What was it like stepping out to that stage?
It was like a dream, because I've seen a few gigs there, a couple of gigs there. And yeah, it's like, for me, that's like the best venue in the world. It sounds amazing. It looks amazing. Well, if you're in the audience, there's not a bad seat in there. It always sounds amazing in there. And then when you play as a performer, it's also all the best. It's just, as a performer, it's the nicest gig you can play. And yeah, it was like, for me, that's always been my dream venue to tick that place off. So yeah, we did it and it was full. There was like, 6,000 people in there. And we played two of my songs and there was 6,000 people with torches singing along and screaming and stuff. And it was like, it was just 10 minutes of like living the dream a little bit.
Are you free to talk all day? Find me cover, 'cause I'm stupid anyway. Oh, and I'm lost, and I'm lost, and I'm lost. So lost, and I'm lost, and I'm lost, and so very vulnerable. And I am beautiful like a puppet on a string.
Fantastic. That's amazing.
Into our dressing room backstage. And you get the dressing rooms, which all the big stars have been in. It's like the previous day you've had Clapton in the same room as you or whatever. And it's all these videos you've seen of events at the Royal Albert Hall. And you walk backstage and like, yeah, it's the same thing. And you're just sitting in your dressing room thinking, we've just played that. And I wonder who else has walked off that stage into this room and had the same feeling as us, like McCartney and all those people. Were they walking into this room going, wow, that was like, you know, real special gig.
It's one of those places just, it's got a sensification to it, hasn't it? I think it's just got a sort of grandeur naturally, isn't it?
It does. And it's like the music so well, it's just like it's all about the music. The whole thing's set up so that you watch and you appreciate music. It was funny, about 4 days, we played it on the Tuesday, and on the Friday a mate messaged me and said, I've got VIP tickets to Jules Holland or something. I'm guest list to Jules Holland. And I was like, do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, love a bit of Jules Holland. So I went, and it was at the Royal Albert Hall. And so I was 4 days later, sat in the audience of the place I'd just played. And it was like a real surreal moment. And we got to go backstage, and like, I think he knew some of the bands, so we met some of the bands. And I walked backstage and I was stood outside the dressing room we'd had. And then like Jules Holland walked out of it. And I was like, oh, this is mad. He's like,
that's my dressing room.
I was in there 4 days ago, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, not to like, I don't like to dream about stuff too much, stay down to earth about it. But it was a nice, real nice, special thing to do.
You have to enjoy those moments when they come along, because God knows if we do enough venues, small pubs, places, crap ones. You got to really enjoy those big ones, you know.
One of the actual last live gigs I played playing my stuff. I've done a few stuff since, but that was one of the last live gigs with my band anyway. It was the last gig I did with my band. So that was November. And I didn't know that I'd be sat here in June, having not even met them this year yet. So, but hey-ho. Well, it's a nice one to think about, the last gig. But yeah. Yeah.
So you released a single in March. That was a lockdown single then. How did that all come about? What was that?
Well, I heard the song recorded for a while, and we just kind of needed to get it out. It's a song called Pale Me, which I recorded last year. And I'd like been traveling for 2 months. Then we came back and we're going to put the single out pretty much. And then I was here for like a week, and then they announced lockdown. And so I got back, I flew in, got back, then they announced lockdown. And then we were like, oh, but we've got this single scheduled to come out in about 3 weeks. So I needed to make all the promo content at home. So I went and shot a music video, like on my own in a field, and tried to do photos on my own. And yeah, you're trying to like, and then cancel a show and do all this stuff. So it was kind of like recorded last year, but yeah, all the rest of it was all kind of locked down and stuff. But yeah, that's out on all the usual places.
It's funny how things change when we're all so very strange but ordinary. Would you take back all your feelings for? Does it matter anyway when you tell?
Did the Radio 1 virtual big weekend?
Yeah, that was a funny.
How did you get that? I mean, what was that? How did they get that come about?
Why? BBC Introducing in Shropshire have always been amazing. They've always like really supported me over the years when I was sending them my James Bond themes. and then in all the different bands I've played in, they've always played my stuff. So yeah, I sent them Play On Me as I did, and they made it like their track of the week. And then they passed it along to Radio 1, and Radio 1, I got a random email out of the blue asking me to come and be part of the big weekend. And this year they did a virtual version because of obviously lockdown. So yeah, I had to send in a performance from home, which I filmed in my conservatory. Which is a weird way to play a festival, but yeah. So I was that happened about a month ago, so that was cool.
Yeah, was that? I mean, did you pre-record it and send it in, and then
that was it? Yeah.
So you got to watch it as live, sort of thing.
Yeah, it went up on like the BBC Sounds app, and they then broadcast it across every BBC radio station across the country.
Wow.
So that was a nice little. It's you know a nice little. A thing amongst kind of feeling like you sat in your bedroom, and then you think, well, I have almost essentially played like 40 gigs tonight in one.
It's like a little, it's like a virtual UK tour in one go.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. It was like every region around the UK. So I suppose it is kind of a mini tour in some weird kind of way. So that was quite cool. And it was cool to be on like the lineup along with like all these artists that were doing the same thing. You know, it kind of puts you on a level playing field a little bit, because you've got like bands like Biffy Clyro having to do the same thing. They're having to make a video on their mobile phones at home, you know, and suddenly everyone, it reminds you how human everyone is again, that everyone's going through it. And, you know, so.
So I know you mentioned the Royal Albert Hall. But would you say that's been the highlight of your music career, or has been any other things that spring to mind? It's obviously a massive thing, but like anything else that springs to mind?
I suppose, I mean, since I've been releasing stuff on my own, that's probably a pretty big moment, really. I only released like my first solo thing like about a year ago, so that was like. I've never kind of done gigs and played under my own name. I've always just been like as part of a band, the front man of a band. So it was kind of nice to like have your own name build somewhere. But yeah, I mean, put me on the spot. I try and think about it. Career highlights. Yeah, I mean, we played a couple of big gigs like that before in some big festivals. And I've worked on, it's a funny thing, I've worked on some cruise ships, which are often like, just the absolute laugh and in a funny way that as well is like a real big thing. I supported Dave Koonin from The Killers. He has like identical hair to me. The two of us like stood next to each other. So a few different support shows and writing with people that I've looked up to, and I write with a guy called Ben Sansom as well, which is nice because I was a big fan of his band Lower Than Atlantis when I was a bit younger and playing in rock bands and stuff. So a few different gigs like that, but I try and just, always think about the next thing in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the Royal
that's
Albert
Hall. That's the curse of the musician, isn't it? You're always looking forward and never enjoying what's. It's good. It's good.
You should the Albert Hall now. Come on.
What's the sort of biggest challenges you've faced, you think, in your career?
I suppose a lot of it's like, I think, I mean, there's always the things about being a DIY musician and the cost of it and trying to like do that and promote yourself, get it heard by people. But I suppose that is just the challenge of it. So it's not like personally, but I think for a while I really struggled kind of having played in bands and written music for bands, for other people, a particular style. It was always like, I suppose, battling with what people expect of you and what you should sound like. So I'd write for a band and then a band would be like, I played in like quite rocky bands when I first started properly kind of touring and playing around a bit. The thing was always to like write a Foo Fighters style rock song or whatever with two guitars and bass and drums and big screaming vocals, whatever. And you do that and whatever, but I never like quite found my thing for a long time. It was always kind of enjoyed that and played in the band, but it was like I wrote the songs for necessity because that's what the band needed. And then it was like that band ended, you start a new band, and then that band is slightly a different style and you write that. And then the biggest challenge was transitioning to becoming a solo artist, because I kind of came out of those with kind of these excess songs, and then kind of people, not specific people, but kind of that general expectation of like, what do you sound like? It's like I would send a song to a producer or an industry person and say, yeah, it's cool, but we don't know what you're about. We don't know what your sound is. We don't know what you are. Like, tell us what you are. And it was like, and for a while you keep wanting to say, well, I'm this, but it takes a long time to like really figure that out in my head.
When you attached your own name to it, did you feel more, find that easier or harder to find your own, to do your own thing?
To start with, it was like harder, because it was like, I was taking it more seriously. I was taking the career more seriously, because like the way we were releasing music and the people that it was being sent to and labels and things like that, it was like, right, this is serious now. I'm not just in a DIY band. This is like, I want to be an artist now, a bit more. So I almost, that pressure of, and the fact that the first couple of songs I was doing were still quite guitar based, and still kind of based on the influences of that kind of coming out of a band and what I was doing that. And then the thing of like people being like, who are you? Like, what are you doing? That pressure really, you know, I found it quite hard. And I moved to London to try and pursue my career more. And that whole move, that whole situation, writing the music, the pressure, everything really got to me. And I kind of really struggled to write music for majority of last year. Like, I just hate everything I wrote. I'd sit at the guitar and just be like, yeah, there was nothing would jump out. I'd play the piano and nothing would jump out until I got asked to go and play guitar in a band. It was like a kind of 60s thing in Holland, go and tour as a session musician. And I was tentative to do it. I was like, I don't want to play in a 60s band, but I was like, at the end of the day, you've got nothing else going on right now. Like, you should just go. And I went, and the whole experience and the people I met brought me out of it. And I would sit backstage every day. We played beautiful theatres. They were like 1,000, 2,000 theatres. And we did like a month around Holland playing these places. And it was like suddenly like I found the energy again for what I loved doing, which was touring and playing in the band and playing 60s, 70s music. And I'd find there was always a beautiful piano either in the dressing room or in or backstage in the theatre. So I would wheel it out, sit in the corner in the dark. And I started writing songs, and it was like suddenly I kind of found a real love for what I was doing. And then it was like I loved the piano again. I started re-listening to everything I listened to when I was like 12, 13, when I first started writing songs and listen and writing music and playing music. And I listened to Elton records and would go buy the vinyl. We'd go through record shops in Amsterdam, like, and I'd buy vinyls and yeah, like that experience was like really, really helped that. For a while I thought I wasn't gonna write any more songs again, but
what a way to spend the year. Later on I will be older and I'll find me worked out. What a way to spend the year.
I'd almost convinced myself that what I wanted to do wasn't very cool, and then going away I kind of realized I didn't care anymore. It was like you write 70s style piano ballads, like no one wants to hear that anymore, no one wants to hear a nice melody anymore. It'd be like, oh, your song's over 3 minutes long, and I'm like, yeah, a lot of my songs are like 4.5 minutes long, you know. But then there's always that balance of trying to like do something that's commercially appealing, but also you only can deliver something that's strong if you care about it. And then I think that's what I started doing. So I don't care anymore. I'm just going to write what I like to write. And if no one else likes it, well.
Okay. That's something that's what you've got to do. You've got to just do your own thing and hope that there's enough people out there that enjoy what that is.
Yeah.
But at least you've been true. At least you've been true to yourself, and you're kind of doing.
I think you have more of a chance of doing that if you are honest with yourself, and if you are do deliver honest music. I think there's a lot more chance people will see, because people can see through it. People can see through your facade. If I came out with a pop song, you know, like if I came out with like a dance pop song, you'd be like, "What is this? This isn't you," you know. Just to like write something that was more streamable or more. Better for radio. I think people seem
I to chased it. My tails for so many years trying to write, thinking about what lyrics I'm gonna, what you know, what sort of keywords I'm gonna put in there, that or what chord progression. It's like, and in the end, it can be the most all that stuff. Just as long as it resonates with people is all that really matters. And finding your something you want to say and finding and meaning it, something that really matters to you. As you say, people can really see through it if it's not that, you know, if you don't mean it.
Exactly.
So what's next for you anyway? What's next on the horizon?
Well, I've done a lot of this recording and I've recorded a lot of stuff from home. I mean, I kind of would like to put something out at some point. I'm gonna just keep developing that stuff. I'm in not a rush to like put something out now. Like I've really taken the time on the music that I want to make sure that it's got, I hope, some support behind it, and I can try and get it in some good places. But yeah, just keep, I mean, in my head, I'm always like dreaming of doing that first album. So I'm always like trying to just write in my head, write the best album I can. And then if that takes me 3 years to find someone to help me make that album, then that's going to be what it takes, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I have live shows planned, but I mean, it's unlikely that something's going to go ahead this year. So it's kind of hard to say, but yeah, for me writing, I'm putting a lot of covers out. I'm doing a lot of, for the meantime, I'm getting musicians that I've met through traveling around the world to help me like do a bunch of covers. I'm working on a Billy Joel cover at the moment with a bunch of people from everyone's from a different country around the world. So,
oh, brilliant. That'd be brilliant. So when are we likely to see, is that going to be like a YouTube thing or social media thing?
So it's all on like my social medias. I try and I release a cover of some kind every Wednesday. I just play stuff that I'm listening to. If no one knows the song, then I'll introduce you to something that's like some random B-side that I'm listening to. But I do a lot of the 70s stuff. I did a Bob Dylan cover last week.
So it's Lewis Coop Wednesdays is what we've got to be in our diary. Yeah. Everyone set an alarm. So they can go to your YouTube, they can subscribe and then get the notifications when you release things, and that's the best way to do it, isn't it?
That's it, YouTube. I post some of my photography on Instagram as well, and I'm on Facebook, and yeah, I'm always trying to make content, so there'll always be random videos and things going up. On all those, and yeah, every Wednesday I try and do cover, every Sunday I try and do a live stream, or every other Sunday. So if anyone wants to get involved with that, then you can.
Brilliant. Excellent. And this is the Need to Know Music Show, and we ask everybody to give a recommendation of an artist that people may not have heard of, but they do need to know. So, I mean, who's your recommendation?
I was just on the phone to my mate Chris, who plays in a band called Hunter and the Bear. So they're really good mates. Chris plays in my band. He's played live with me, and we've toured together. And yeah, his band are amazing. Hunter and the Bear. I support them last year as well. They're really kind.
I've heard of them. I need to know more about them actually now because I don't realize that I've heard of them.
They've just put out a great single called Digital Light, I think it's called. Yeah, they're great. Also, I will mention a band called Hunger Moon. There's a duo called Hunger Moon. My mate James plays in it. They're a brilliant duo, a really good kind of Jeff Buckley slash a little bit electronic-y, synthy kind of pop stuff. Like, really good band. So Hunger Moon and Hunter and the Bear would be my two.
And we'll put the links in the description below as well, so people can find those guys there as well.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, thanks for joining us. Good luck with everything you're doing. I can't wait to hear all these songs you've been writing. Good luck with it all. Thanks for joining us, Lewis Coop.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this, like, and supporting stuff while we're all kind of in lockdown. Like, it's great. So thanks for having me.